heard on great radio stations all across America. It's the National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
This is the National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry, Communications Director for the VFW, and as always, our dedication.
Hey, we do this show for you, the men and women serving on active duty, the Guard and Reserves, to the millions of veterans out there, and of course, to all your families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
How about this now, Jerry? You're sitting in your hospital bed at Walter Reed, and, you know, not feeling great. A lot of things going on, worried about, you know, family life, holidays coming, and all this kind of... Country superstar Pam Tillis walks into your room.
Oh, man.
And it's not a mistake.
I would be absolutely thrilled. I'd be happy.
Right.
I'd fall out of my bed.
That happened.
She is phenomenal.
She's very good, and she does this every year, spends some kind of quality time with the troops, and she did it this year at Walter Reed. We're going to talk to Pam Tillis this hour.
All right.
Find out all about that. And then we got the expert on Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We can't forget December 7th, 1941, a date that still lives in infamy, the attack on Pearl Harbor. And yeah, Jack Green, he's a naval historian, very interesting guy. In fact, Randy, he was the expert who was on the set when the movie Pearl Harbor was filmed.
You know? Really?
He tried to keep Hollywood straight to some degree what happened.
On the
so
facts,
yeah,
at least.
Very interesting.
So that's all coming up this hour. We'll start with Pam Tillis. She's on the way next right here on the National Defense.
Stay tuned for more of the National Defense after this.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Veterans of Foreign Wars believes in active allegiance to flag and country. Through legislative activism and service to our military forces, veterans, their families, and communities. Freedom starts at home. Pledge your allegiance again. If you're a veteran and served overseas, you may be eligible to become a member of the nation's elite veterans organization, the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
You've served your country, now you can help your country serve others. Call 1-888-JOIN-VFW. That's 1-888-JOIN-VFW.
The following letters were written by our troops.
My dear fellow Americans, I truly appreciate your support. I was starting to wonder if people had forgotten about us over here. But then one of my buddies showed me this website. And now his tears are streaming down my face. I can see for sure that you haven't. Private Emily B., U.S. Army.
It's so heartwarming to see the American people not letting the men and women of the armed forces be forgotten. Your letters make a group of grown men, battle-hardened and gruff, act like a bunch of kids around a Christmas tree. Thanks. Staff Sergeant Matthew H., U.S. Army.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. But don't take our word for it. Take theirs. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry. And, okay, you know, we set the scene. You're at Walter Reed.
Yes.
You're not feeling good about life right now because a lot of things going on. Pam Tillis walks into your room.
I'm cheered up immediately.
You feel better already.
Already.
Country superstar Pam Tillis on the phone with us. Pam, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Hey, this is so neat. And, you know, the thing that I like about what you do in terms of your commitment to the troops, this is certainly not the first time that you've done something for the troops, and it won't be the last time. And it really sounds like you have kind of a personal commitment to the military. Is that true?
Well, I just think as an entertainer, first of all, you have the opportunity. You have some opportunities to do some things that other people might not get, and I just feel like it's one of those situations where you just seize those opportunities. And of course, and yes, I do it because I feel like I don't even get to do enough, you know. It just seems like the right thing to do, you know. It's just the right thing.
Well, and you get this call, and tell us about this deal, because this just happened, I think, November 18th. Were you guys?
And it was kind of a spur of the moment thing, but I did have that day open, and I was so thrilled because I'd heard about Walter Reed, and I'd never been, and so it was it was not even a question. So you know, we loaded up our guitars, and it was a songwriter type of a presentation that mm-hmm. we did. I went under the auspices of the National Songwriters Association, Nashville Songwriters Association International. And one of the things that we thought would be a neat thing to do, and it was just really the first one they've done like this, and they do more, was we went up and we just talked to some of the guys about songwriting, because you know, we were in hopes that we could encourage them in their own creative process. You know, that's not to say they might get Garth Brooks recording one of their songs next week, but the catharsis of writing, we felt might be something that was useful to some of the guys, you know, and they were interested in it. And they're also interested in behind the scenes stuff about the music business, that kind of thing.
You performed as well, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And you're right that, when you're sitting in a hospital, when you've been wounded, you have a lot of things on your mind. In writing, any type of writing, songwriting, certainly, there's a lot of feelings pent up inside. That
well, a lot of these guys and gals are wise beyond their years,
right?
And what if a song did come out of, you know, from one of them? I'm sure they'd all have something, you know, to tell us and to teach us. And so, you know, we're just trying to connect a few dots that way.
And you know, your visit, you taking the time out of your busy schedule, is a teaching, is a lesson for the rest of America. You're highly successful entertainer. You don't have to do something like that. And a lot of entertainers don't.
Right.
You have appreciation for our troops and what they've done, and
do. I feel like I've learned so much because of some of these things that we've played and done. And I'm so glad that I've had a glimpse into that military life, and to learn how the men and women think, and the people that serve, you know, what drives them and their concerns and everything. It's just been a huge education for me, and I'm grateful for that.
We're talking to Pam Tillis, and Pam, you know, because of this visit and just hearing you talk now, could there be a song in it for you?
Well, you know, quite possibly. When things touch you like that and they move you, it does tend to come out in your music. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
And Jerry, I don't know if you saw this or not, but she visited with a lot of folks in the 10th Mountain Division.
Right.
And I know when you were in Afghanistan, that's when you you hooked up with the 10th Mountain.
Right, 10th right. Mountain. And, of course, we had some wounded and killed.
Right.
And, yeah, a special place in my heart for 10th Mountain Division people.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
You're welcome. You know, I didn't get to meet as many of them as I would have liked to. You know, but I hope that I get to visit again and you know, meet some of the guys. And I haven't been over to in the Middle East yet, but I would like to go. I've played in bases in other parts of the country, and also in the USA. But you know, I'd love to go over there sometime and visit the guys there.
Well, I'll tell you what, Pam. We host an Army show once a month with Army leadership. So we have an in with the Pentagon, the big guys there at the Pentagon, and of course, you know, with the Veterans of Foreign Wars organization, we're very strong, and we can help pull some strings. So,
put my name in the hat.
All right.
hey, Pam, I wanted to ask you, too, now. You guys are getting ready to go on tour with the Tillis Family Christmas Tour.
Yeah, we're in the middle of that,
yeah.
Actually.
And that goes, looks like it goes all over the place. I mean, from Georgia to New Mexico and up to
Canada.
Canada, yeah. And yeah. Now, and this is including your dad, of course, Mel.
Uh-huh. And my brother, Sonny, and my sister, Carrie. Yeah. We just decided to take it all on the road.
Wow.
Well, you know, I was just wondering about your dad. Did your dad, did he ever do any kind of USO tours, and was he connected with performing for the military at all?
He has, and I he could tell you more about that than me. Our schedules, you know, vary, and sometimes it's hard to keep up with what each other's doing, but he was in the Air Force, and I know he, you know, he'd love to do some stuff like that. I mean, he's extremely supportive and understands all that, and so yeah, I know he would.
Well, we thought about
in
having.
In fact, I know the few times that I've mentioned doing something, he's like, "Well, how'd you get that? How'd you do that?"
We thought about having your dad on, but you know the way he stutters, we only have a 1-hour show, and that would be about what, two questions.
Well, you might have to edit it a little bit. You could do that.
And now, are you guys still in Branson at all?
We do about 6 weeks a year there.
Okay.
And that's a nice thing to have in our back pocket. And it's a, you know, family atmosphere there. We like it. And my mother lives there, so it's an opportunity for me to go and work and pay the bills and still get all filled up some home cooking and
well,
hang out with the... Yeah,
I tell you what. You when you're in Branson, and I know you're busy, but Kansas City isn't that far away from Branson. We'd love to have you visit VFW National Headquarters. And
well, I tell you what, all you got to do in the late summer or early fall next year, just call. You know, the I know our guy set this up, Don Murray Grubbs.
Right.
Just call him, and he'll set it up. And because it isn't that far, and I like to come over to Kansas City and get some barbecue and shop. And
yeah,
all right.
Do
yeah.
All that stuff.
Yeah, we'd love to show you what we do for our military and our veterans. So
I'll count on that. Okay.
Okay.
So you guys just do that.
Cool.
So now, Pam,
that would be wonderful.
We're going to play a selection from your from last year's Christmas album you released. What would you suggest?
Oh man.
I mean, they're all good.
There's a song on there that I think is really sweet. It's called Beautiful Night.
Beautiful Night.
And it's kind of acoustic-y, and you might like that.
Well, we were looking for something acoustic-y.
Okay.
So that works out great. Pam, hey,
it is now.
Hey, thank you so much for talking to us, and thank you for your appreciation of the military and spending that time with them. That means a ton, and, of course, it means a lot to us, too, and just encourage everybody to do that, especially during the holiday season, to give a thought and a prayer to the men and women of the armed forces. And Pam Tillis, thank you so much. Continued success, and hope we see you in Kansas City.
You will. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Jerry.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks to all the guys and gals out there.
Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye. Merry Christmas.
Shine up those boots, Private. Jerry Newberry in the National Defense will be right back.
Hush now. Quiet has covered the ground. Fresh fallen snow all around. Stars burning holes in the sky. Beautiful, beautiful night.
military warehouse south of Washington, D.C., a USO stuffing party is in full swing. By the end of the day, volunteers will have stuffed over 10,000 USO care packages, packed them in boxes, loaded them on trucks, and sent them on their way to our soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and military bases around the world. They'll stuff them full of things that most of us take for granted, but that our troops don't often have. Things like toiletries, playing cards, candy, books, little things. Little things that carry an enormous message to our troops. Little things like, thank you. Like we'll never forget you. Like we're behind you 100%. Like we love and cherish each and every one of you. Little things. We're all about the little things. We're the USO. So are you. For more information and to find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
What do you want from the Wizard of Oz?
Just messing with you. But seriously, people don't want to stand in front of my big, awesome wizard head and hear me going, duh. They want answers. That's why I go to USA.gov, the official source for government info. It gives me the smarts to go with the show. Say someone asks for a brain. I go to USA.gov, type in student loans, and 4 years later, they're chock full of knowledge. Is the Wicked Witch terrorizing your neighborhood? Well, move. Then search USA.gov for change of address form so your friends can find you and the witch can't. How about if you're stuck here from Kansas and want to go home? Well, check out USA.gov for the latest travel restrictions and passport applications. I even use it for myself. Bought my sweet ride at a government auction I found on USA.gov. I call it the Wizmobile. Balloons are for squares.
For federal and state government information, there's no place like USA.gov.
Welcome back to National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry. And man, this is just a historic show for big firsts. You know, we talked to Pam Tillis about her visit to Walter Reed, and now just kind of switching gears completely, but another guy that's involved in the entertainment industry, as we talked about, Jack Green is with us, and he's a naval historian and was on the movie set of Pearl Harbor as the expert, Jerry, and this guy knows his stuff.
He does, and of course, Pearl Harbor, the visitor center there is, well, we need to talk to Jack to find out all about that, but it's a... you know, it's an iconic place. Millions of Americans have visited it. And, you know, with December 7th coming up, it's only appropriate that we talk about Pearl Harbor.
Absolutely.
And Jack, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Hey, thanks for being with us.
Yes, I'm glad to be here.
You're a naval historian and you're a Pearl Harbor expert. Tell us a little bit about that, why and how you became an expert on Pearl Harbor.
Well, in the year 2000, I was working for the Naval Historical Center in Washington, D.C., which I recently retired from, and now I'm living in Greenville, South Carolina. And at that time, the Department of Defense had agreed to support the movie Pearl Harbor, which at the time was the largest, most expensive movie ever budgeted, $135 million. And the Department of Defense decided that they would allow the movie makers to go on site on Ford Island at Pearl Harbor to do shooting. Well, it's been 60 years, and they didn't really know a whole lot about Pearl Harbor, and so I was asked to join the team and to help work on the film. I worked on the project for 13 months, including 8 weeks on set, 5 weeks on Ford Island
Wow.
in Pearl Harbor, 2 weeks in Houston, Texas, where we filmed aboard the historic ships USS Texas and USS Lexington, and finally 1 week in Burbank, where we did the FDR scenes.
Okay, let me ask you about the movie. I mean, some of the effects were great. Mm-hmm. Personally, I didn't care for the love interest and all that. I thought if you're making a movie about Pearl Harbor, why throw that in there?
Because you want people to come and watch it.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah, that's exactly
okay.
why
all
they
right.
do that.
Well, I'm not one of those. I don't like hugs and kisses in a movie.
Jerry's going for the documentary version.
I understand. Well, yeah. You have to understand, the movie makers were kind of trying to put Tora, Tora, Tora from Here to Eternity in one movie.
Right, right.
That's right. Yeah. It's a good thing they had you to keep them straight on the facts, though, because, I mean, that is so important in a movie like that, because you do have to try to combine those different things, and to keep it historically correct, it's nice they had a guy like you. Did you have to correct them on a lot of different...
we did a lot, myself and the movie's project officer, who then Lieutenant Melissa Sherman, now commander of Melissa Sherman in Chicago, Illinois. It's very much a give and take thing. You must understand, movies are entertainment. They're not history books.
Right.
And movie makers, there's a whole John Ford quote that says, you know, if you have to choose between shooting the truth and shooting the legend, shoot the legend. and so movie makers, of course, and you must understand that modern movie makers have to appeal to a very young demographic.
Right.
And so... they have a great fear that if they show something extremely accurate, that their demographic won't relate to it. So one of the big conflicts that we as historians who deal with media and deal with movies have is that they want to do something that appeals to the 16 to 34-year-old demographic, and they want to bring in modern ideas and modern values and stuff into another time. So that's something that we were dealing with all the time.
Now, let me ask you a couple things about the movie.
Uh-huh.
How many mistakes? How far did they stretch some of the things in the movie?
Well, the Japanese did attack Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941.
Right.
That is true.
Okay. So that's the one they got right.
That they got right.
Okay.
Okay. But a lot of the other details, they basically, like most movies, most directors they did stretch things. They brought things in. They brought in modern emphasis or modern concerns into 1941 that weren't there.
For example?
Well, there's several different things. The Ben Affleck character flying with the British prior to U.S. entry in the war.
Right, right.
At the time, you could not do that. The United States was neutral. That was one thing. The other things we were concerned about was the portrayal of Admiral Kimmel.
Yes.
Admiral Kimmel is a controversial figure, as is his Army counterpart, General Short, in the attack. You must understand, Pearl Harbor is probably the most controversial American military action of the 20th century. Historians still argue about it, and primarily around its two principal players, Admiral Kimmel of the Navy and General Short of the Army. So we were very concerned about how Admiral Kimmel was portrayed. The other thing was General Doolittle. And General Doolittle, of course, is an icon of the Air Force, one of the great heroes of the Air Force. And in the original script, he was portrayed as sort of a blustery, foul-mouthed, two-fisted type character, which the real General Mitchell, Doolittle was anything but.
Right, he's very retiring. And,
right,
yeah.
Very polite, very capable fellow. I mean, this was 180 degrees out for the real General Doolittle. So those were some of the things we had to wrestle with. We also were concerned about the portrayal of women at the time. They wanted to bring year 2000's ways you would talk and treat a woman into 1941, which you simply would not do.
Yeah, right.
I tell them, you have to understand, 1941 is very much the era of the proper lady. And women would not be treated that way. So there was a lot of give and take between us and the movie makers.
Let's talk about the memorial.
Yes.
I don't know how many visitors every year. You got any numbers on that?
Well, no, that's actually run by the National Park Service.
Right.
But it's the number one tourist attraction in Hawaii. And ironically, it's the number one tourist attraction for Japanese tourists to Hawaii. If you go to the memorial, you will see crowds of Japanese tourists coming to see the memorial in USS Arizona.
What's the draw there? Like, is it you think a respect thing, or is it like, it's when we kick their ass? Or,
No. You must understand. I think the attack on Pearl Harbor was the greatest event of change for both the United States and Japan.
Certainly.
What lots of young people today don't understand is virtually everyone alive at that time can tell you where they were when they heard about the attack on Pearl Harbor. The attack brings the United States into World War II, which is the greatest fundamental political, military, and social change to the United States. The United States of 1945 is far different than it was in 1941.
Right.
And so, and for the Japanese, the same thing happens. Their imperialistic, aggressive ways, they are soundly defeated during the Second World War, and then rebuild and become an economic superpower, with the United States' help, afterwards. So it is a defining event, probably the most defining event in the United States and Japan of the 20th century. So I think it has that appeal for both sides, and also the human cost, knowing that there are 1,177 men entombed in that sunken ship is quite moving.
Now the Arizona Memorial, they're building a new visitor center. They had the groundbreaking last month, as I understand
That's
it.
That's correct.
And I seem to recall reading about the present visitor center, and there's problems with the structure. Is that correct?
Well, it's built on an area that, quite frankly, sinks and things of that nature. Plus, since it was originally opened, the Park Service is able to accumulate large amounts of artifacts and other documentation for the attack that they, of course, would like to put on exhibit for the many visitors to the memorial. So it's a two-pronged thing that they need to do. They need to replace the existing structure, both because it's sinking, number one, and number two, they need an expanded space for an additional exhibit areas. So it's two reasons.
And you mentioned the entombment of over 1,000 sailors and
Marines.
And Marines, correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place I know when you visit it, it's, it, for me anyway, it just very solemn type of thing to stand there and realize that so many service people are right there.
Yes, but the irony is that a lot of people don't understand that more people died on 9/11, roughly 2,900, than
right.
died at Pearl Harbor, 2,400. And
right.
a lot of people don't understand. Mm. But I don't think 9/11 has had the great fundamental change upon the United States that Pearl Harbor did.
No, and you're right. I don't think people understand, and you mentioned it
a couple times. That's an interesting point.
The way it impacted our country. I mean, to look back at where our country was at the time, of course, in the throes, in the midst of a depression, we were economically just, going nowhere. We had the Dust Bowl thing going on, and the attack on Pearl Harbor, with Japan. I mean, they were military. The Army was running the show, essentially. The military, running amok through China and. All places in Asia, throughout Asia there, and total metamorphosis after World War II. Of course, our economy changed. The track houses were built, subdivisions, highway system. Probably one of the most important things to come out of that, of course, was the GI Bill.
Well, you must understand the gross national product of the United States expanded 250% from 1945 to 1965.
Right.
I think we could safely say that prior to Pearl Harbor, the world tried to affect the United States. The United States reluctantly became involved in it and was many times isolationist.
Right.
After 1941 up to 1965, the United States affected the world. And I think that's the great fundamental change.
Well, and Jack, I wanted to ask you, too. We're talking to Jack Green, a naval historian and a Pearl Harbor expert. You know, you mentioned that 9/11 did not have the same kind of impact as a Pearl Harbor, at least on the American psyche. And I wonder if that is because of Pearl Harbor. Because, you know, when Pearl Harbor happened, there had been no other inkling of any kind of, certainly that kind of destruction placed upon this great military power of the United States. Since that happened, of course, Americans know that that the United States is susceptible. And I wonder if that did take a little bit of that away from the impact?
Well, that's an interesting point, because the attack on Pearl Harbor was the first major attack on U.S. soil in its history, in recent history at least, from that time. The war had been, of course, been brewing in Europe and in Asia for years before, since 1937 in the Pacific and in 1939 in Europe. But the Americans always thought of it being somewhere else, that sooner or later we might be dragged in, but we would have to send an expeditionary force to other places. The idea that another foreign power could do a devastating military attack upon U.S. soil was something that Americans never really contemplated. And that's why it has had such a great shock effect on the American public.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you say, since Pearl Harbor, 9/11, as horrible as it wasn't the first time. So maybe the idea that we could be directly could be attacked was permanently changed by the attack on Pearl Harbor. And if you look at American policies after World War II, our defense policies were always underlined by, we do not want another Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Yeah. That's true. But I got to disagree with you guys a little bit, I think. Mm-hmm. I certainly agree in, the 40s, 50s, and even the 60s, that we lived in fear of attack. But I think after the fall of the Iron Curtain and dissolution of the Soviet Union, I think we became complacent. I don't think we, most Americans, first of all, Pearl Harbor's ancient history
to a lot of generations.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that we became complacent and just never really thought that we would be attacked in such a horrendous way.
Well, that's a good point. Americans in 1941 looked upon Japanese things as being cheap, mm-hmm. ineffectual copies of Western things, that sure, they can go beat up the Chinese, but they're not going to take on us.
Right.
And so we were somewhat naive and smug in 1941. And perhaps later on, we didn't realize that, there were other forces out there since the end of the Cold War that could threaten us. And that was...
It became naive and smug again.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, there's, how do you wage war nowadays? We were attacked right. on our own soil.
Yeah, it was easy to identify the enemy after Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I know what you're saying.
But let's think about the dissolution of the Soviet Union. We didn't defeat the Soviet Union militarily. They were, Soviet Union fell apart economically,
uh-huh.
and that's what it was all about. Since 9/11, Osama bin Laden I've read that he thought he would disrupt America's economy by those attacks, throw it into turmoil, and we'd go down the tubes.
You have to understand, the Japanese basically were a military force of a recognized power attacking military installations.
Right.
For the most part, one of the inaccuracies of the movie Pearl Harbor is it shows the Japanese attacking hospitals on Hawaii.
Right.
No hospitals were attacked by Japanese. So the Japanese basically attacked the ships in the harbor and the airfields. Most of the casualties, the vast majority of the casualties, are military personnel. Whereas in 9/11, civilians were the primary target and the primary casualties, whereas military casualties are the minority.
Right.
That's one. These are some big differences between the two.
Gotcha.
Where the military was the target at Pearl Harbor, it was civilians that were the target on 9/11.
Hey, Jack, I want to talk about some of these myths about the Arizona, if we can, and Pearl Harbor. There's three in particular I want to kind of get to here, and
okay.
then you can kind of let us know where we stand.
Mm-hmm.
That she is still in commission.
No, she is not. Okay, she was decommissioned in 1942. But that is a common urban myth. No, she's not no longer in commission in the United States Navy.
Okay, a bomb falling down a stack and detonating the boiler sank her.
Well, that's got to be true. I've seen that in every movie about Pearl Harbor.
No,
that's right.
That is not true. Basically, it was a bomb hitting a magazine of the number 2 turret. What most historians feel now is that some of the smoke of the internal explosion went up to the stack. Okay, but that's a common myth of the attack on Pearl Harbor.
And how about all the 14-inch guns removed for use in coastal batteries?
That actually happened.
Oh, it did happen.
Batteries Arizona and Batteries Pennsylvania. The 14-inch guns, the two turrets, the two rear turrets that were undamaged, were taken off and put on the Isle of Oahu as coast artillery defenses. The problem was, by the time they did their test firing, it was 1945, the war was almost over, and coastal defenses had become long obsolete.
All right, how about this one? Most naval personnel look like Ben Affleck.
Well, no, that's not exactly
that is true. That is not true.
Okay. That is not true.
Well, that's another thing.
I know that. I've known some sailors that...
really?
Yeah.
And all the nurses don't look like that either?
No, they look like Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah, really?
Very attractive lady and very nice lady, too.
Oh, boy. That had to be a thrill, though. I mean, you know, just being part of that process. Did you think that the movie would become as big as it eventually did?
Well, I was surprised. I think Pearl Harbor always makes... I think there'll be Pearl Harbor movies for the future. This is Pearl Harbor was not the last one, and certainly it won't be. Pearl Harbor has a very dramatic appeal to it. You have this idyllic place, this calm before the storm, which is suddenly just torn apart.
Right.
As in the as Sergeant Warden says at the end of From Here to Eternity, there ain't going to be no boxing championship this year. That is a fundamental change to the people there, to the United States, to the world in general. And so that's always very good fodder for movies and stories and novels and things of that nature. The movie was highly promoted. They put in the Disney Corporation put lots of money into it. It was a successful movie. But I think also because there were lots of inaccuracies in it, what we're seeing is with cable history television and the internet, there's a lot more information and, of course, a lot more feedback on things. There are hundreds of thousands of Pearl Harbor buffs. And these guys know everything about Pearl Harbor. There was a chat room on the movie a year before the movie even opened.
Wow.
Any kind of trailer or teaser that was put out, every inaccuracy, these guys would get on the chat room. I was monitoring the chat room through the whole production of the movie and coming out with all this stuff. So what Hollywood producers have learned is, yes, no movie or television show will ever be 100% historically accurate.
Right.
But if you deviate too far... What happens is you get all these buffs out there who come out and saying, hey, man, this is wrong, and this is wrong, and this is wrong, and there'll be a sort of a bow wave of negative publicity towards the production.
Jack, I think a lot of times, too, like, you know, I'm not a Pearl Harbor buff, but when I saw the movie, it made me want to go and search the internet and find out if those facts were true. I mean, just because it made me more interested in the topic.
Well, what happens to me when I do things like that, I get angry then.
Right, and then you're usually kicked out of the theater halfway through the movie. And then that's a problem, too.
Hey, besides the Arizona, there's more than one ship that was hit and sunk during the attack. How many vessels were...
Well, basically, there were eight battleships there. All of them either sunk or damaged. There were three cruisers damaged, four destroyers damaged, other auxiliary vessels, and 169 aircraft destroyed.
Now, what percentage, those ships, what percentage did that represent of our total naval force?
Well, you must understand, only half of the United States Pacific Fleet was in the harbor during the attack. The other half was at sea. Mm-hmm. All the aircraft carriers were at sea, and most of the heavy cruisers were at sea, and roughly half of the destroyers. So a lot of people don't understand is they think the whole fleet is there. Well, no, it's not. Roughly half the fleet is there. The major targets the Japanese wanted to take out were, number one, the battleships, which they do, and number two, the aircraft carriers, which they don't because the carriers, fortunately, are not there.
Why didn't they wait?
Well, that's one of the great controversies of the attack on Pearl Harbor. There were two waves. There were 350 aircraft launched from six aircraft carriers 250 miles north of Oahu. There were two waves, each of which took about 45 minutes with a 20-minute break in between. So the whole attack takes less than 2 hours. The Japanese were interested in taking, as I said, the battleships, because at that time, naval thinking looked upon the great surface action, where lines of battleships would line up against the other, duke it out, and whoever lost least would win the battle. And
right.
This was what both sides were thinking of. So if you take out the battleships, this war plan cannot work, and if you take out the American battleships. So the Japanese were primarily interested in that. At this time, the aircraft carrier is looked primarily as an auxiliary to the battle line, the battleship. See, so the very idea to the Americans of taking six aircraft carriers, massing them together, and launching 350 aircraft towards a ground target was an extremely radical idea.
Yeah.
Right, and naval aviation was still relatively new, correct?
That's correct. Okay, it started in the 1920s. The British had first developed it late in World War One. The Americans adopted it in the 1920s. But still, it was considered an auxiliary to the battleship. What happens in World War II is that the battleship becomes an auxiliary to the aircraft carrier. The aircraft carrier becomes the U.S. Navy's primary capital warship and has been so to this day.
And it's just so interesting to me. And, you know, the way that how could you ever capture anything historically correct like that in a 2 hour, I think it was a little over 2 hours.
Over 2 hour movie.
The movie, yeah.
But you have to understand, you also have to appeal to a demographic that many times doesn't even know there was a World War II,
right.
Let alone.
Right.
It's
yeah,
all red.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people in the movie going, wow, this could really happen.
Right. And that goes back to my point about, ancient history right. when we were,
Well, you must understand the movie was very popular both in Japan and China. In fact, it was the number one.
I was going to ask about that.
China in
2001. Wow.
Yeah, I have read something similar about Tora, Tora, Tora.
Now, Tora, Tora, Tora is a very good movie. I've always watched it zillions of times, but even it is not 100% historically
right,
accurate.
Right.
Well, the movie really will be.
Well, only 50% of our fleet was destroyed
right.
damaged.
Well,
so.
It was in the harbor.
Yeah,
yeah in the harbor.
Harbor.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And Jack, if I could ask you, our producer Nate fancies himself as a Pearl Harbor expert.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, do you have a question that Nate could answer that that he could possibly have a shot at? I mean, he comes in, when he found out we were interviewing you, he said, you know what, you should interview me as the expert.
Right, he's really a bore.
Yeah, so if there's a question you can ask him just to see if he gets it right, that would be great.
All right, you ready, Nate?
Go ahead, Nate. Okay, we get a minute. Okay,
you want to ask the question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, everyone knows about the air attacks upon the ships and airfields of Pearl Harbor. But what other form of attack did the Japanese use on December 7th, 1941?
Excellent. Nate?
Didn't they have, dolphins or something that were trying to put bombs on
Nate.
Ships?
Well, underwater,
oh
underwater, right? Can I answer this one?
Yes.
Submarines.
Yes, they had mentioned submarines.
Right.
Five of them.
Right.
I think dolphins is
no,
much
he mentioned,
more
No, he mentioned submarines.
No, he said dolphins. Yeah. Dolphins.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Wow, and he's supposedly the expert, Nate is.
Yeah, so, Nate.
Apparently he won't be in a movie set anytime soon. Well, Jack, listen, thank you so much. This has been fascinating. This is great stuff. Are you working on any new movies?
Well, I've been done some of I was the historical advisor for the Broadway revival of the play Caine Mutiny Court Martial.
Oh,
really?
And I also was the historical advisor for the Tony Award-winning revival of South Pacific. It was on Broadway.
Wow.
In both of those cases, I went to New York and gave them production notes and briefed the actors on the World War II Navy and how things and how their characters were acting and things of that nature. I've helped out a little bit on a new Hallmark movie that will be airing in spring of 2009 about the U.S. Navy in the 1960s.
Wow, so you'd go up and debrief the cast?
Well, I've done that in the past.
Right.
Most of the time I do technical support. For example, flags of our fathers, I supplied the uniform information and the ship formations.
Oh, really?
CGI.
Oh, that's exciting.
That's a great movie.
Yes. And so,
what's the best, according to you, what is the best war movie of all time?
Oh, gosh, the best war movie of all time. That's a hard question.
Yeah.
For the Navy, my favorite one is probably the Caine Mutiny Court.
Oh, yeah.
For the Air Force, it has to be 12 o'clock high.
Mm-hmm.
For the Army, it has to be Patton. And for the Marine Corps,
I have to say Iwo Jima.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That was right.
I knew you and Jerry. You and Jerry on the same wavelength.
Okay, for them, that's got to be the Marine Corps movie.
Is that still playing in Oceanside?
I don't know.
it was playing back there in 1968, and my understanding is it's been playing there for like 10 or 15 years or something.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, Pilgrim. Oh, that's the right movie.
Yeah. Well, Jack, thank you so much, man. Really great talking to you, and continued success. And, hey, if you have any more projects coming up, please let us know. I'd love to have you back on the show.
Sounds great. Glad to be on it.
Great. Cool, thanks. You so much.
Bye-bye.
All right, we'll be right back here with the National Defense.
You're cleared for shore leave, sailor. Be back by the end of these messages.
The VFW is looking for a few more heroes. The largest combat veterans organization in America wants to get you involved and keep you active. With nearly 2 million members and 9,000 posts around the country, the VFW is doing the tough job of supporting our troops. You can be a part of all the excellent programs that keep the fires burning on the front lines. Programs such as Operation Uplink, with phone cards for active duty and hospitalized veterans, Adopt-A-Unit, which provides assistance for nearly 1,000 military units, and care package efforts for the troops serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Only someone who's been there can understand what it means to be remembered. The VFW has been the heart and soul of the military for over 100 years. Isn't it time you stake your claim as a veteran? Call the VFW Membership Department at 1-888-JOIN-VFW or log on to VFW.org for more details. You've served your country. Now you can help your country serve others. Call 1-888-JOIN-VFW. That's 1-888-JOIN-VFW.
Big Brothers Big Sisters presents 100 Years of Helping Kids.
With us today are Sally and her big sister Marcy.
Hi.
Hello. To share some stuff we've learned.
Kids and sugar, a combustible mix.
Hey Marcy, let's go to the zoo.
Maybe the park.
We could fly a kite.
I want a hot dog.
No,
ice cream.
Is that a horse?
I love horses.
Hey, let's dance.
Maybe that's enough chocolate.
And sing.
La la la, la 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 la.
It's also not uncommon for a kid to demonstrate special powers.
Did you know I can run through walls?
No.
Watch this.
Oh, Sally.
Don't worry. I also have amazing healing powers.
Moments like these happen every day.
Making a big difference in the life of a child. To find out the many ways you can help support kids in your community, call 1-888-412-BIGS or go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
That's BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
This message brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
That's all for now.
Welcome back to the National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry. And man, what a show.
Yeah,
I mean, it just keeps moving, moving, moving. We had Pam on. We had Pam off. We had Jack on. He left. We had so many things that, you know, that we've talked about. The Pearl Harbor, certainly very fascinating and very outstanding for the entire program. But
yeah.
Oh, man, we just all kinds of stuff. Hey, I want to mention something to you.
Go ahead.
Jerry Newberry.
I'm trying to be serious.
I want to mention something to you. I saw something on the CBS Sunday Morning the other day that I thought was outstanding, and I want to get your comments on. I'm sure you've heard about this. Young lady, 18 years old, received the Silver Star. And, you know, it was such a great story. She was a medic, her first medical procedure in the field.
At FAB Salerno,
yes,
Afghanistan.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course, she... same place I was.
Yep.
She left like days before I got there. So
is that right?
Yeah, I thought I was going to be able to interview her.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah.
That was just, so, I mean, 18 years old.
18 years old.
You know, well, and you're, and I'm watching her in her interview.
There's no time criteria. There's no,
no
criteria says you got to be 21 years old.
Right. Right.
You got to be 21 years old to drink in most places.
To vote and, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're 18, you can put your life on the line. And
Well, and it was just amazing to me to see the way that she talked and basically just went back to that same attitude of, hey, it was my job. It was no big deal.
Yeah.
It was my job.
Yep.
And there was some there was a little bit of controversy about that, about some of the other in fact, one of the guys that she saved his life said that maybe she didn't deserve the Silver Star, that maybe she had just gotten it because she was 18 and female. So, you know.
Well, you know, I talked to the people at the Combat Support Hospital about her, And
well, both of her commanding officers said had suggested her for
and some other people. This they don't hand out Silver Stars,
right?
You know, they scrutinize that most often when someone is recommended for an award that high. It's the third highest award that the Army gives for valor. More often than not, they'll get knocked down.
Yeah,
to a Bronze Star or something. She earned that medal, and
that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was very cool. Right. But that same attitude is just it's just amazing to me, and should be amazing to anybody. Hey, and a little shout out to our buddies at the Overland Park, Kansas VFW post. They did a lot of things for the held a big Thanksgiving dinners. A lot of VFW posts do for the community. A veteran or
right. It's a great post, and we're going to try and do that, aren't
yeah.
we? We're going to try.
We're going to feature a post every week. And if you got a post doing a lot of stuff right now, get to us at thenationaldefense.com. Let us know what you're doing, and we could feature you on the program.
Yeah, and hey, tell your friends about our website. They can listen online. They don't have to be sitting in front of the radio.
Absolutely.
Just go to thenationaldefense.com. You can listen to this week's show and shows we've done in the past. Got a photo. Great photo of me on there. Not so great
Fantastic.
Photo of Randy.
Great shot of Jerry. Yeah. And he's at one point dancing with Jack Green. A lot of stuff going on. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week right here on the National Defense.
I never thought that this is where I'd settle down. I thought I'd die an old man back in my hometown. They gave me this plot of land, me and some other men, for a job well done. There's a big white house, sits on a hill just up the road. The man inside, he cried the day they brought me home. They folded up a flag and told my mom and dad, we're proud of your son. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace, I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington. I remember Daddy brought me here when I was 8. We searched all day to find out where my granddad lay. And when we finally found that cross, he said, son, this is what it cost to keep us free. Now here I am, 1,000 stones away from him. Recognized me on the first day I came in, and it gave me a chill when he clicked his heels and saluted me. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best of company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace, I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington. And every time I hear 21 guns, I know they brought another hero home.